on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk, above average investing for the average investor. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, here's KPP Financial President, Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the May 13th edition of Invest Talk. I do really appreciate you being with me. Now, this show is for both beginners and experienced investors. My job is to hopefully make you a better, more informed, and hopefully this will be a teaching event for you this hour. And so that's really my goal, is to be informative and teach at the same time. Now, do you feel investing is complex or do you think it's easy? The mechanics of investing is pretty easy. Buying and selling stocks or mutual funds or ETF, you know, you get online, you can buy. The mechanics are easy. And and they make it easier and easier all the time. They're making it, you can do it on your phone. You can do it anywhere you want. But the building and managing a portfolio and finding the equities that make up a sound portfolio is not simple. People can find a stock, and that's a great stock, and it works, and the dude did very well. But it's not all about finding a great stock. It's building a portfolio of stocks, diversifying, spreading the risk, understanding the risk you're taking. Buy those great stocks. Try to find them. But don't put, over and over and over, buying a stock and putting all your money in it, you'll win, and you may be right. The worst thing that can happen to you is you buy one and it goes up and doubles and you think you're a genius, because you'll keep doing it and eventually you'll lose your money, lose all your money. Building a portfolio is much more complex than just buying a stock, or even the mechanics of how to buy something or sell something. So that's really what we need to learn here. And today, with interest rates so low, more and more people are being nudged or pushed or shoved into the stock market. And this is at a time when maybe they don't want to take that risk. But you're making 0.1% on your money market. You're making 0.25% on your CD, your year, 2 year, 3 year CD. You're making so little, even with the very tiny inflation we have, you're still losing buying power. You're losing money by leaving your money in the bank. So more and more and more people are being forced into the stock market when they may not understand and feel, and they may not understand the risks that they're taking, because we've had a bull market for so many years. There's going to be a bear market again someday. There's going to be corrections, and we haven't seen even a really decent correction. The most recent one we had, almost 10%, was last October, but before that, what, 5%, all the way back to 2011. So those were just minor corrections. So I'm really concerned about this. You know, what are the risks people are taking, and should they be taking those risks? Do they understand the risks they're taking? Just like building a portfolio that can be defensive, do they understand how to do that? Hopefully this show will help teach you to do those things. That's my goal. Okay? Now, do you have a question about investing strategies? Maybe about what you should be doing with your IRA, 401k. Maybe you're at an age where you don't want to take as much risk. Is there ways to do that? And do you have a question about it? Hopefully. You can call our number. Our number is always the same, 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. We're live 4 to 5 Pacific time. So if you call at that time, if you can talk to me live, and we can have a conversation. If you call any time other than 4 to 5 Pacific time, you still can leave a message. We call it the anytime listener line number. And here's a call that came in earlier.
Hi, Steve and Justin. This is Rick from San Mateo. I listen to you guys on 1212. I love the show. So my question is more general in nature. My foreign exposure is through Vanguard, and I have the emerging markets, a European, and the all world except U.S. And my question is, how does these ETFs trade during the day and the markets they represent may be closed at that time. And sometimes I look at the markets overnight, and it seems like it doesn't relate the next day. So anyway, I'll listen for your answer. Thank you. Bye.
You know, that's a very good question. So if you have an exchange-traded fund that's in, let's make it simpler. Let's say it's in Australia, an ETF of Australia, which is, EWA, I think. Okay, so you have an ETF in Australia. So it's buying Australia stocks, of tracks the Australian stock market, and it's traded on our exchange. Well, when we're open, they're closed. Their market's closed. So the stocks inside that ETF are not trading on the open market in Australia. So how does that work? Meaning the ETF going up and down here in today's prices, how does that work when the Australian market is closed and you're following the Australian index? Well, one way is because no market's really closed for, or they're open 24 hours, 7 days a week, even our own. You have trading after hours. That's one way it could be. But I, you know, to be perfectly honest, I'm not sure about the mechanics. I know markets are never closed, that you still can have ups and downs overnight. Look what happens here in the United States. You know, there's always stocks traded overnight somewhere. You know, that happens quite often. They just report the trades on the next morning. So I'm thinking that they're just doing approximations. They don't know for sure if their market's closed. But I don't have the answer to that. I think that's a very good question. I really don't. You know, maybe I'll look it up during the break and see if I can't find the answer to that question. Good question, though. I never even gave it much thought. Have not. Interesting. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. The ETF players debate the future. These are the experts. The people are in the ETF space, the people who produce them. They look at what's in store for the future for investors. And we're going to talk about it. I'm going to share that. That's going to be our main talking point today. I also want to talk about April retail sales report that came out today. It wasn't that good, and I want to talk about why. We still haven't seen that much of a recovery from the very poor first quarter. That's going to be meaningful if we don't get it. Meaningful in many ways. But so we'll discuss that. That's where the retail sales will lead us. Why millennials will eventually buy cars and homes. Because right now they have been postponing that activity. You know, it used to be in the early 20s that people got married and they started buying houses and having families. Millennials haven't been doing that. And have you been paying attention to the bond market and the European bond market? It's still falling. And have you noticed that our U.S. dollar has fallen too? So I want to talk about that as well. Do you know what the 10-year treasury rates are in various countries and the various major economies in Europe versus our economy? What interest rate yields they're paying? I have some numbers that I'm going to share with you. I think that's pretty interesting. What happened to the market today? Well, the day started off pretty strong. It was all green. Everybody was happy. And, of course, gold really shot up as the dollar fell sharply. But the market ended up mixed. The Dow was down 8. The S&P was up 6. The Dow was down 8, and the NASDAQ was up 6, and the S&P was down 1. So the broader market was kind of weak. The market was weak today. And I will say this, the market has been weak all year. There's no change. It got up to close to the high for the year, 3 or 4 days ago. And ever since it got close, it started to fall again. It's having a hard time breaking above the highs it made at the end of the year. It's really struggling to do that. But it's just about there. I mean, as of today, you're just about flat for the S&P 500. The NASDAQ has done a little bit better. But talk about a very sideways moving market. As I look at a chart, we're still in the bull market phase, even though we've had 4-plus months of no movement up. It's still in that trend up, still. Don't think we have broken it. We have not. Fixed income offers a lot of value points that equities do not. Equities meaning stocks. We have a simple one-page info sheet that can help you understand more about managing a bond portfolio. It's yours free with your insider membership, which also gives you access to our recorded webinars. Anybody can sign up. It's free. Remember, it doesn't cost you a thing, and you don't have to put in a lot of information. Just go to investtalk.com. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Now, you know I've talked about ETFs, and they are very, very popular, and they've gained popularity over the recent years, hugely so, at the detriment of mutual funds. And exchange-traded funds are still very popular. And there was a meeting with some top ETF providers and very well-known people in the industry, and they were talking about where the direction was going for ETFs. And there's really two schools of thought. One school of thought is ETFs are just going to become more popular as they exist today because there's only about a 10% penetration rate right now. So there's still a lot more mutual funds out there than there are ETFs, money in mutual funds versus money in ETFs. So the school, one of the school of thought is that's where it's going to continue to migrate. And that's probably true. I don't disagree with that school of thought, but I also don't disagree with a second school of thought, and that is smarter ETFs. Smarter ETFs and ETFs that are more managed as opposed to just following an index. Smarter, beta smart, smart beta ETFs, smart different ways of following indexes. And another school of thought just thinks it's going to broaden out even to more ETFs. So one is saying, well, we have plenty of ETFs because it almost tracks everything. And the other says, no, it's going to be a combination of both. I don't even know why there's two schools of thought. Both things are going to happen. And in some ways for you and me, it's if they get more and more and more ETFs, that just makes the whole landscape more and more complex. And I worry about that because as these ETFs get more complex in their construction, the harder they are to understand. What does it do? And here, you know, the public may be buying things they don't have a clue what they really are doing because it's very complex. So maybe it would be smarter just to follow the plain old indexes, you know, and just buy those or sector funds. But it's not going to stay that way. As long as people want to buy more things, it's going to get more complex. And part of me thinks that's fine. I'd rather see that myself, be more diverse and be able to buy and sell almost any fraction of the market I want. But on the other hand, the more complex it is, the harder it is for people to understand what they're doing. So I don't know. I'm kind of torn with those. I'll give us more. Let us figure it out ourselves. But be very careful. If you're going to buy an exchange-traded fund, you need to understand what it does. If you buy an SPY, which is the S&P 500 index fund, ETF, it's pretty easy to understand because you're buying 500 stocks. They go up and down in value. That's where the ETF goes, up and down in value. But when you get into a smart beta sub-index of the Russell 2000 market cap under a billion, pretty soon, what am I doing? What am I buying? You see, so that's what I'm talking about. It can get complex. I hope you know by now that any money questions is welcome on this show, on Invest Talk. Your questions help me stay on track with what you want to know. Instead of me just thinking what I think you should know, I want to know what you want to know. So give me a call, 888-99-CHART. You can reach me right now. It's a 24-hour, 7 days a week listener line.
Our podcast distribution is made possible each day by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President. We're really close to hitting our 4 millionth InvestTalk download. Steve and Justin are so pleased that you find this podcast worthwhile. Why not tell a friend and help us hit 4 million? And thanks again for subscribing.
888-99-CHART. Let's go ahead and talk to George in San Mateo. How are you doing, George?
Doing pretty good. Hey, I invested in a company. I was looking at numbers, balance sheet-wise, but I don't know that much about the company per se, but from what I see, it looks pretty good. The symbol is IPXL.
Okay. Impact Laboratories.
I want to see what your thoughts are. Yeah, short-term, long-term.
Okay. And you already own it, George?
What's that?
You already own it?
Yes.
Okay. It's out of Hayward, California. It develops specialty generic-branded pharmaceuticals focusing on controlled-release generic or branded drugs. So it's focusing on controlled release. It's a $3.2 billion company, so it's right there in the mid-cap. A little bit on the small side, but mostly in the mid-cap area. Their sales are growing very fast. Last quarter is 21%, this most recent quarter. 30% before that, 19% before that, and 45% that. A year ago, it was sales were falling. Now they're really picking up. And earnings are going to go from $1.32 in 2014 to $1.51 last year to $2.25 a share next year. The numbers, George, look pretty good on this stock. Now, this value, it's kind of pricey. You know, at $2.25, if you give it a 20 PE, that's right about where it is, $45 a share. Okay, so does it deserve? Yeah. It kind of does deserve a 20 PE, George, though. It deserves it because of the growth rate. It deserves it. So it's not cheap, but it's not expensive. It's right about where it should be. So I noticed that the earnings were out. Sales were much better than expected, but earnings fell a little short. So in other words, costs went up. So I think for the long term, I think this is a good company to own. It looks pretty solid to me. For the short term, it may move sideways down for a while. It may not. It's a fairly priced, so it shouldn't collapse. But I don't. I think you're going to have to be patient with it if you want to hold on to it, George.
Okay, but it looks like a pretty safe. Safe place.
Pretty strong company, yes. Pretty strong. Okay?
Okay.
Thanks
okay.
for the call.
Great.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Let's go to Israel in Florida. How you doing, Israel?
Hi, doing very good. I'm here in Florida, and I have a question about a stock for you.
Okay.
The stock symbol is NOV. They're involved in the oil industry. Had somewhat of a pullback over the last few months, and I was wondering if you think this is a good time to pick it up.
Okay, yes, and thanks for listening to the podcast. I appreciate that. National Oil Well Varco, NOV. It is a it's a $20 billion company. It's a big company. It's not that well known, but it's a big company. Engaged in manufacturing and sale of equipment, components, and products to the oil and gas industry worldwide. So it doesn't look for oil. It doesn't pump oil. It doesn't drill for oil. It doesn't do any of that. It is the sale of equipment and components and products to the oil and gas industry. So I kind of like that. It's oil-related, but not oil price strictly controlled, you know. So it has, of course, fallen sharply from, what, last September till March, where it bottomed, because oil fell and everybody stopped drilling and, you know, so it does have that problem. You're going to get a 3.5% dividend yield on it. The PE is 8. The 5-year range is 7 to 19. So if you're asking me, do I think it's a good place to buy? Well, the earnings are going to be going down this year and next. But I have a feeling that's already built into the stock. So if you have patience, I think this is a good place to buy it in this range. Could I oil may come back down a little bit, but I think we've seen the bottom of oil, Israel. If we've seen the bottom of oil, if that's true, we've seen the bottom of probably for this company.
So you think it's a good long-term stock to hold for the dividend?
Yes, I do. Very solid.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. That is NOV, everybody. Okay, let's go to Mucan in Sunnyvale. How you doing, Mucan?
Hey, I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Good. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
Okay. Yeah, I had a question for a particular stock. It's Groupon, GRPN. So what do you think in the short term or long term for this stock?
Well, right now, it's growing decently, even though the sales growth has fallen. Earnings growth is going to increase 70% this year, and then another 23% next year after that. But that means it's only going to be next year 23 cents a share. And the stock is selling for what, $6.73? So that means that's a 30-35 PE ratio? And if the stock sales were growing that much, I would feel much more comfortable. But sales kind of peaked off, and they only grew 3% in the most recent quarter. Before that, they were running around 20-25% a quarter. Now it's only 3. I'm a little bit concerned that it still might be a bit overpriced. So, Mucon, so
okay.
I think if you don't own it, I would wait and be patient. I think you'll get it cheaper. I do like the stock. I like what they do. Groupon provides.
I already own it.
Oh, okay. If you're patient, you'll be fine. But I think it's going to be overpriced. It's going to be pretty. It's going to take a long time. I think it's just run its course for the time being. Okay.
Okay. Got it. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Mucon. Appreciate it. The most important step you can take before you can think about achieving your financial goals is coming up next on the next half hour on InvestTalk 101. You're listening to InvestTalk. We're going to go talk to Art in Menlo Park. How are you doing, Art?
Good, Steve. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I just wanted to... I just wanted to ask you about SH. It's a short play on the market.
Yep.
Because I think there's it seems like there's going to be a pullback at some point, like you keep telling us. And it seems like the price of it is pretty low at this point, because I've seen it as, years ago it was at about close to 90. Mm-hmm. And now we're down to about $2, it seems like. So
you're
wondering what your thoughts on it.
Well, you really don't want to think about what the price is, because that doesn't really matter, because it's tracking the inverse of the S&P 500, just like you pointed out. SH, everybody, is pro shares short S&P 500. So the S&P 500 goes down, this will go up the exact same amount. If the S&P 500 goes up, this will go down the exact same amount. So it's inverse of the S&P 500, and it's a great hedge. And Art, we own this in our stock managed account. We have had 3 or 4 hedges on just because we think it's smart. That doesn't mean we don't own stocks, because we're almost fully invested, not quite, but almost fully invested. So we own a lot of stocks. But if the market in general turns down, these are perfect hedges to make money in that situation. Or just a hedge part of your portfolio, so your whole portfolio won't go down if the whole market goes down. Hopefully the stocks you own will hold up better than the overall market, and while this goes down, and you'll go up the same amount. So Art, it's a great hedge, and we own it right now, because I do think we're due for a correction. I really do.
Yeah, because that's one of the reasons why I was looking at it, because if there is a market correction, I've got some pretty good dividend paying stocks, and I just wanted to find something that was
this would offset
offset it.
Yeah, you can hold on to your dividend paying stocks, and maybe you have high capital gains in those things, and you don't want to sell them because you don't want to have a tax problem, or you just want to hold on to them. A position in SH will hedge you against the fall of those and keep your portfolio up. I think it's a very good idea. Art, appreciate the call.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Steve.
Thank you. Let's go to Harish in Santa Clara. How are you doing, Harish?
I'm doing good, Steve. How are you?
Good. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, thanks for taking it. I have a question about Foot Locker FL.
Uh-huh.
I see that the company has pretty much no debt, and their PE is lower compared to its peers. So I just wanted to find out from you, is this actually a good place to get into this stock, or you think, or looking at its future earnings, how does it look like as a long-term investment?
Long-term, it looks pretty solid. This company has grown its earnings and grown its sales every year, every quarter. It hasn't. It's an $8.5 billion company. Don't think its growth is very strong. We're talking in the middle to high single digits, 5 to 10%. But it's consistent. That's what's really attractive. And you're right, it has hardly any debt. Management owns 3%. Mutual funds have been buyers over last year. A year ago, there were 653 mutual funds. Now there's 914. That's a huge increase. Pays a 1.6% dividend. It's had a pretty good run in the last year, going from 48 to 61. You know, I like it. I think as a core holding, this would be a good core holding. And you could buy it and hold it and ignore it, and you'll be fine. Should you buy it right here? My feeling is that you'll probably get a better price than we're selling at now, about $61, sometime during the summer. But you kind of want to own it going into the Christmas season next year, because these retail stocks, if the economy's doing well, retail stocks tend to move up during, you know, before the Christmas season starts. So I think you will get a chance to pick it up a little bit better price, but you could buy half of it now. It wouldn't hurt my feelings, and buy the other half when it falls, because you will get a fall. Okay. I just don't know. I think around, if you wanted to get a price, I like around $55 to $56. That's where I would love to buy it. I would be more comfortable buying in there. Okay?
I see.
Harish, okay. Appreciate the call.
Thanks for that. Can I have a quick question?
Sure.
This is actually with regards to your previous conversation regarding SH.
Uh-huh.
So if you want to actually hedge a portion of your portfolio, and then for any of these market corrections, or so what percentage is suggested to go down that route?
Okay. Well, you know, it depends on how your portfolio is constructed. If you have in your portfolio a number of big blue chip stocks that you're just going to hold on, that's your core holding, then you want to hold on to them. Or maybe you have gold or gold mining companies. Well, those generally act as a hedge as well. And it really depends on you. Do you want to hedge off all your stocks? You know, if you want to do that, then you probably would do a 50% of your portfolio in an SH, a short in the market. But I wouldn't do that. I would just hedge off a portion. At least that's what we do. Because we also have different kinds of hedges, you know, that we own. We own stocks that tend to move up when the market moves down, and we have other stocks that are more aggressive. So it really depends on the portfolio, Harish, and how comfortable you are. Because remember, the more you hedge and the market takes off, you're going to make less money because your hedge will hold you back. You know?
Right.
So, you know, there is a theory out there of about between 20 and 30% is a significant hedge, and that should be plenty, but that means the portfolio will probably still go down. It just go down much slower. The problem with hedging is knowing when to get out of the hedge, Harish. That's a difficult thing. When do I get out? When do I get out of the hedge? And that's not easy for professionals like myself either. Don't think we'd have the crystal ball. We don't. But it does protect you from going down. Okay?
Okay.
Thanks for the call.
Right. Thank you, Steve.
Appreciate it. April retail sales was not very good. They were flat. Okay, the report came out today. So we have been growing only 0.9% over the last year. And that's from a peak of 5% growth in retail sales just last August. So all of a sudden, retail sales have fallen sharply. What area did well? Restaurants did well. Internet spending did well. But because cut back, gasoline, autos, home furnishing, electronic gear, they were cut back. And even if you exclude autos and gas, which, you know, gas, because retail sales and gas is tough because it goes up and down in price. So that kind of misleads you as to whether it's improving or not improving retail sales. You take those out, it was only slightly better than flat. So the retail sales report wasn't very good. And this is for April. We're now moving into the second quarter. Remember, the first quarter GDP was really kind of stinky. We barely grew. The first report of first quarter GDP was up 0.2%, and that probably, very likely, may go negative once it's revised, because because there was a huge spike in imports and not much exports increase. So we're going to see that's a drag on GDP. So that revision is going to come up pretty soon. Then you have retail sales for April not really improving. Now, what did improve? Job creation. So, you know, everything's not doom and gloom. I don't want to give you that impression. It's just that we need retail sales to perk up. And no one's no of the consumers are not spending that extra cash they're getting from lower gas prices and spending it. So this is a problem. We have to look at that. Now, what does that really mean? That may mean the Fed may not raise rates. That's what it might mean. Well, they're not. Some people speculate they might raise rates in June. Not happening. September, still possible. Depends on how good the economy is looking. We'll see. We just, you know, it's hard to know. We haven't seen any dramatic pickup in our economy. Time for InvestTalk 101, getting organized. You have to do it to prevent money from falling through the cracks. You've got to be organized. The first step is to take stock of what you know, what you have. What is it that you have, and locate all those forgotten or ignored assets, all those accounts. And depending on your age and how complicated your life has been, you could have anywhere from 5 to 15 accounts scattered all around. You'd be amazed how many accounts you have built up. And one thing you got to do is get organized and maybe simplify that. And a lot of that can be simplified. Make a list of all retirement accounts that you have, all accounts that you have. Find out which ones you can combine. If you don't know, call me. I'll tell you. Because you know you can combine an old rollover IRA with a current IRA, and you can roll over an old 401k into your current IRA. You can roll over a SEP IRA into a current IRA if you're no longer funding the SEP. You can combine different accounts as long as they're the same kind. And I think you should do that. Makes sense. See, once you get the list of all the accounts and then figure out what you can combine, then do so. Don't procrastinate. Make your life easier. You have to understand what you're invested in. You know, how do you keep track of all those different portfolios? Now, if you want to talk more about ideas about organizing, well, give me a call or send me a note. Go to investtalk.com and click on Contact Steve. That's an email that comes directly to my desk, and I will answer it. That's InvestTalk 101. If you have a question on this topic or any others, you can always check in with me at 888-99-CHART.
If you'd like to see the investment programs offered by KPP Financial, just go to the Investments tab on investtalk.com. You can see details about the Dynamic Growth Program or Balanced Income Portfolio. The information is there for you on investtalk.com.
Hello, this is Carl from Cleveland, Ohio. I listen to your podcast, and my question is it better to invest in a dividend stock or a dividend ETF? Thank you.
Okay. The question of is it better is probably not answerable. Okay, if you twisted my arm, I would probably say an ETF. And why would I say an ETF? Because it's much more diverse. It's a bunch of stocks. Whereas if you did invest in one dividend-paying stock, you have a higher risk factor because it's only one stock. But most likely, if you do a dividend-paying ETF, the dividend yield is going to be lower than if you pick good, solid stocks. And I would notice I used the plural, stocks, not the singular stock, but plurals. You can find much better-paying, dividend-paying stocks and buy a group of them in different sectors, and you can produce your own dividend paying ETF by owning a number of stocks, 15 of them, 20 of them, and you know, all probably paying, you probably get more dividend yield that way. But always picking individual stocks is harder than picking an ETF. I do have an ETF a list of dividend paying ETFs if anybody's interested, and I'll send it to you. If you send me an email asking for it, I can send you that list of ETF that pays dividends. But the question, is it better? If you're going to twist my arm, I'll say the ETF is better than individual stock because you don't want to buy just one stock. It's dangerous. I don't care if it's the biggest blue stock. I don't care if it's ExxonMobil. I don't care. I don't care how safe it appears to be. It's still more risky than buying a group of stocks that pay dividends. Why millennials will eventually buy cars and houses. Millennials are those people probably in their late 20s-ish, somewhere around there. And these, maybe early 30s. These guys and girls are not, one, getting married, two, buying houses. Why? Why is that happening? Why? Because there may be a permanent change in our society where people get married later in life and start gathering assets like houses and new cars later in life. Maybe because it's forced onto them because of student loans. They're carrying heavier and heavier student loans, and they want to get those paid off or down or off their back, and that's pushing them to make decisions, life-changing decisions of marriage and home ownership later. That might be it. But I'm not convinced that's the only answer. I think it might also be that they just choose to wait longer. I think that's part of the answer as well. No matter what it is, they will eventually be buying houses and cars. And they're getting closer and closer to that time. While the other end, my generation, which are the baby boomer generation, we're entering retirement, but we're not able to retire. We're going to keep working because we don't have the money to retire. Some of us don't have the desire to retire. And some of us don't. We're realizing that date of retire at 65 or 66, that's all artificial. That's a number just thrown out there by the government, Social Security. That doesn't mean all of a sudden you shouldn't stop working. Doesn't mean that, especially if you can't afford it, right? And many of us can't. So you got different dynamics. Everybody thought that baby boomers were all retired at the same time and reached age 65. That's not turning out to be the story. We're coming up on the last segment of the program. Let's try to get your question in. Call me right now at 888-99-CHARGE.
Thanks again for subscribing to our podcast. Coming up on the next Invest Talk, from people with lots of money and no money skills to the rich and savvy, meet the financial advisors of the very wealthy. That's our talking point for Thursday, May 14th. We hope you'll join us then.
We're here for you. Beginner or experienced investor, does not matter. I want to help you. 888-99-CHART. If you're a podcast listener and you can't reach me during this live program, we're live 4 to 5 Pacific time, Monday through Friday, you can still call. And here's a call from Mike in San Jose.
Hi. I got a question. I wanted to know, what do you think is the difference, like, in investing in a preferred shares of Freeport MacMarin compared to the common stock?
Well, preferred shares of any company are very different than the common stock of any company. Preferred shares act like a hybrid bond fund. They pay, when you buy a preferred, they guarantee to pay a dividend. Okay? Guaranteed. Even the company, the common stock, don't pay a dividend. And they pay that dividend, and they'll pay it at a certain rate that they acknowledge, at 5%, 3%, like a bond. And so the preferred stock doesn't move up and down in value like the common stock. It does not move because it's also related to interest rate fluctuation. If interest rates go up or down, the preferred can go up and down in price. So it's not just how the fortunes of the company itself, but really the preferreds move also with the fortune of interest rate moves. Okay? So they're very two different animals. So make sure you understand how that relates. You know, many preferreds are callable. Some bonds are callable. Callable means that they meaning the company, can call the preferred back and make you sell it back to them. And sometimes they have a time frame, a year, 2 years, 3 years. And so you got to really understand what you're buying. Preferred act very different than the common. They're not the common shares. Preferred shares versus the common shares. And don't think that they move in conjunction. Not necessarily. They don't. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. The Eurozone bonds, have you been watching the government bonds in Europe? They've been sinking. That means interest rates have been rising sharply. Now, remember, they have their own QE going on, right? A big QE program by the ECB, the European Central Bank. And so that would normally drive down rates. So why have the rates been moving up in the last few weeks? Well, do you know what the rates are in Europe? Do you know what our, I'll just compare 10-year treasury rates. Look, our 10-year treasury rate pays 2.29% per year. So if you bought a 10-year treasury bond right now, U.S. treasury bond, you would get 2.29% per year. Okay? If you buy an Italian bond, 10-year bond, Italian, you get 1.89%. That's after it has risen very strongly. All the bonds in Europe have risen. Spain is 1.85%. The UK, 2.02%. Japan, 0.46%. And how about Germany? Germany, it was zero not that long ago. Now it's 0.73%. Notice that the U.S. by far pays the most. And our economies are much better than many of these European stocks, European economies. So I'm seeing a reversion to closer to what our norm, our rate is. Why is our rate so high compared to theirs? Shouldn't be. Their economies are weaker than ours. So think about that. That's one of the reasons why they've gone up. Maybe bond holders, the people who buy these bonds, say, wait a minute, why do I want to own these bonds when the economies are so weak? What if they default? Chances are slim that they will default. I understand that. But there's always that possibility. And why would you want to own them when they're so cheap? Or is it because there's no supply out there of these bonds? The supply is being taken up, absorbed by the ECB? Remember, the ECB is buying bonds, buying government bonds. If they buy them all, what does that leave for everybody else to buy? I'm just speculating here. Why is it spiking up? If I had the answer, I'd give it to you. Before we close the hour, if you'd like to find out more about our balanced income program, just go to investtalk.com. The investment approach primarily focuses on attaining income, an income stream, through stable, large-cap, dividend-paying stocks, and then high-grade corporate bonds. We also purchase other income-producing securities as well. But that's our balanced income fund. You can see details on investtalk.com. Or you can contact me by hitting contact Steve on investtalk.com. Send me an email, investtalk.com. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley, and for Justin Klein and everyone at KPP Financial, thank you for listening, and we'll hope you'll join us again tomorrow on Invest Talk.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.